What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Around the League podcast. This is the first time we're recording a separate Around the League edition. We want to thank everyone tuning in. I'm your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. With me, as always, is the CEO of HedgeBetter, the man himself, Justin Fine. Justin, what's going on, brother? You ready to take it out of Foxborough and talk about what's going on around the NFL?
I am, man. It was a super interesting week. A couple of crazy games. Definitely ready to get into it.
It was a great week, and there were some really great games and like some real surprises. Yeah. Some huge surprises across the league. Unfortunately, some surprises that in particular caught me off guard. We'll talk about that down the road. I want to start, Justin, with the Sunday night game last night. Eagles at Cowboys. I've been a huge skeptic of the Dallas Cowboys all season, and they won last night against, I think, a Philadelphia team that many of us have been talking about as the best team in the league, a legit Super Bowl contender. What I'm here to tell you today, and what I want to start with, is that I still do not believe in the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not taking the fool's gold on that team. They beat the Eagles at home 4 years in a row. So all con artists, all con men have a way of lulling you in to make you believe in them. The Dallas Cowboys fit that paradigm to a T. They caught a beat up Philadelphia team. They caught a Philadelphia team coming off a rough stretch still. And they caught a Philadelphia team where the quarterback is hurt at home on a Sunday night, and they played their best game of the year. I'm still highly skeptical of that Dallas team is going to be able to win in January against San Francisco or even in Philadelphia if they have to go there. Frankly, your thoughts, Justin, on the Cowboys. Are you believing in them now like most of the national media is after this win yesterday? I say it's still fool's gold.
Yeah, I'm on that boat too. I mean, I think the Cowboys, I think they were a good team. I definitely think that they're legit in terms of, you know, their ability to come out and win games and compete. But I think it's complete fool's gold. I don't see this team as being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I don't see them, you know, in January being able to go into San Francisco or Philly again in win a big NFC championship game. I just don't. Look, I think Dallas is a good team. They played a divisional opponent who had already beat them this year. They were catching them again. Like, you know, this Eagles gauntlet has not ended, right? Like we talked about, oh, San Francisco got them at a good time. But I mean, you know, the Eagles have got to be just absolutely beat to crap. You know, we mentioned Jalen Hurts is a little injured, but they went the Cowboys the first time, then the Chiefs, then the Bills, then the 49ers. Back to the Cowboys. I mean, come on, the Eagles. I'm surprised that they're all still able to show up. I think they need another bye week. Honestly, I mean, that is just an
absolute. They have the Eagles have the easiest schedule now for the last 4 weeks of the season, which is kind of interesting. It's just like all their hard games were crammed in
right
to one little spot.
But then now they find themselves in a very tough situation, a very interesting situation, right? Because we just talked about Jalen Hurts is a little banged up. We looked at what happened. Like Jalen Hurts, remember, I believe it was last year or the year before when he was banged up. And, you know, they wound up sitting him the last couple of weeks until that first playoff game. And you could definitely tell when he came back that there was still some rust. So, like, what do you do with Jalen Hurts? Do you sit him and try to get him fully healthy for the playoffs? Do you let him play through it and risk further injury? I mean, you're still right now in a three-way tie for the number one overall seed. I mean, I think it's a very, very tricky situation right now in Philadelphia, even if their schedule does let up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely – the verdict is in for me that I sounds like for both of us that neither of us believe in the Cowboys. Right. The Eagles are a different matter altogether. Like I still think they're a pretty good team, but I do see a couple red flags now that I'm concerned about. Okay. And I think you saw it last night. The Eagles only held the ball for 23 minutes last night.
Yep.
Which is, I think, very concerning because I look at that roster, the way they built that roster, and they've got all these studs on that front seven and all these like
Georgia guys they drafted and all the hype, you know, Jalen Carter and all the other great Cox and everyone else they got in there, and they can't stop the run. They couldn't get the ball back last night. They couldn't get off the field last night. Is it because they're tired or is there something wrong? It's the second week in a row now because it was the same thing with San Francisco. So I think that that is one thing that I'm concerned about with Philadelphia. And I'm going to tell you the second thing. And you just hit on this, okay? Stop the tush push. It's not worth it. Your quarterback is hurt. He's beat up. He was hurt last year. You saw how it affected him. He's a guy that plays the game very physical. He relies on his mobility, even though he is a great passer too. You can't have Jalen Hurts running into a pile with 10 300-pound guys three or four times a week. You've gone to the well too many times on it, and now your quarterback is clearly beat up. Stop doing the stupid tush-push play.
Yeah, I think too, it's like if I'm Philadelphia, it's like, I get it. Like, you know, they like to say, oh, people know it's coming and they still can't stop it. But like, you're at the point now, I think for the next couple of weeks, like you said, lay off it a little bit. Okay. You don't need to run the tush push into the ground these last four games. Like, I think if I'm the Eagles, I am just focusing on getting to the playoffs with a healthy roster, because I still think when it's all said and done, top to bottom, I might be the most complete, talented team in football, right? And I would way rather take my chances with a fully healthy team than trying to, you know, go balls to the wall these last four games and putting yourself in a bad position for the playoffs. Like, look, I know they lost two in a row, but again, I think they're just tired. I think they went through an absolute gauntlet. They went through the first half of that gauntlet, you know, almost flawlessly. It caught up with them these last two games. And I think they just need to spend these next couple weeks getting right.
You still believe in the Eagles?
I still believe in the Eagles. Now, do I definitely don't think the Eagles are flawless like maybe some people thought they were. They definitely have some flaws. They're definitely beatable. But I think this is a team that if they can get healthy, get right, and recover over these next couple of weeks, you know, I think we'll see a completely different Eagles team in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that take. I think you're seeing that there are some flaws in that team clearly manifesting when they play against good competition. But at the same time, I still think they have as good a shot as anyone in the NFL, except for, I mean, maybe San Francisco is the hot thing right now. But let's see what kind of shape San Francisco's in January too, because that's the real wild card in this whole thing as well. Like, we all are talking about the NFC playoff field and we're assuming that San Francisco is going to have all their guns. They're clearly the best team probably right now. I think we'd all agree on that. If they're healthy, they've shown that really throughout the 14 weeks of the season, but we don't know what kind of San Francisco we're going to get. No one should be confident that team's going to be healthy in January because they get hurt all the time. They have a lot of players that are injury prone. And my point being is that, like, hey, you know, I think the Eagles still are the second best team in the NFC, still have a legitimate shot, even though they're clearly exposed a little bit on some of those flaws. But I think the Eagles can win the NFC still. And I really don't think the Cowboys can. And I'm just being honest on that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp. I just, for some reason, I know the Cowboys are talented. I know Dak Prescott is having like an MVP caliber season. I know that defense is good. I know they're tied for the best record in the NFC. I just still, maybe, look, call me a victim of the past. I just have too many memories of this Cowboys team reverting back to the Cowboys when it counts to get over that mental hurdle and that hump. But I completely agree. I still cannot view the Cowboys in the same plane that I view the Eagles and the 49ers.
Let's move to the Kansas City Buffalo game, Justin. That was the other really two huge games yesterday. And I think there's a couple huge take homes that from the Chiefs Bills game. Number one is that game just completely validates that Buffalo needs to make the playoffs, deserves to make the playoffs, and that as football fans, we're all going to be better off if Buffalo makes the playoffs, right? Because that Buffalo team, I think, can still compete with any team in the AFC. I mean, I don't even think that's debatable. They've now beaten Miami. They've beaten Kansas City. they really haven't had a lot of luck this year. Not to blame circumstance, but I mean, let's face it, they miss a field goal against Denver, or they take a 12 men on the field penalty against Denver. They give up a game-winning drive to Mac Jones, just like the only time in his career he's done. Like, that team is really a couple twists from being, you know, right at the top of the conference. The delta, the difference between Kansas City and Buffalo, it's really not that great, is it?
No, I mean, you could even argue that from just a complete roster construction perspective, Buffalo was maybe even a step ahead of Kansas City. I think with Kansas City, you just see the fact that they have the better coach and the better quarterback. But Buffalo is a really good team. That's a really good roster from top to bottom.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They are. I mean, and they've been riddled with injuries too. I mean, you can't deny that. But it's really about Josh Allen, to be honest. I mean, Josh Allen is just such a terrific player. And even last night you saw, like, he throws a huge pick in the second quarter of that game. I think Buffalo was up 14-0 and had a chance to really take command of that game. And he's a double-edged sword for sure. But he is maybe the second best player in the NFL right now. And it may not even be that big a difference between him and Mahomes. And like, Josh Allen can beat anyone. Like, I think the Bills could beat the 49ers. I think the Bills could beat the Eagles. We saw that 2 weeks ago, how close it was, right? Like, the Bills can beat anyone. Somehow, some way, please get them in the playoffs. So I think right now they're like the 10th seed in the AFC, but there's a five-way tie. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
When it's all said and done. Yeah. And get it. But the AFC, the whole league is better off if Buffalo makes it. Now, let's talk, Justin, about the Kadarius Toney offsides penalty at the end of the game that took away a potential go-ahead touchdown for the Chiefs. What planet are we on where an official makes the correct call for a player that was lined up offsides and people are actually blaming the official who threw the flag before the pass was even thrown, by the way. Okay, people are upset that the official penalized the player who lined up incorrectly and not mad at the player, including Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid. I think it's ridiculous that people are blaming this official. Blame Kadarius Toney. Last week, it was Marquez Valdes-Scandling. The week before, it was someone else. The Chiefs wide receiver core is the problem. You have to rely on a player like Kadarius Toney, who has always been like this. This is what you get back. Blame the player. Blame the GM. Fine. Why are we blaming the official? I don't get it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's ridiculous that, like, look, just because it's the Chiefs, just because it's Mahomes and Kelsey, we want to add another highlight reel, another chapter to their legacy. Like, the narratives, the stories, they don't matter. Like, this is the NFL, the rules are the rules. That was 100% the correct call. And, oh, I mean, let's not overlook the fact that there was a very questionable call in the Super Bowl last year against James Bradbury and the Eagles, which ultimately wound up being the reason why the Chiefs won that Super Bowl at the end of regulation the way they did. So the Chiefs are in no position to complain about ticky-tack calls that decide a game. And if anything, the Kadarius Toney penalty was way more blatant and egregious than the James Bradbury one. So, you know what? I look in the stakes were way smaller, right? You're talking about the Super Bowl versus a regular season game. So I look at that and I'm like, the Chiefs have absolutely no reason to complain. I don't care if you're Mahomes and Reed. I don't care if you're Kelsey and the Chiefs. Like, that was a dumb play by Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney, there's a reason why the Giants moved on from a first round draft pick as quickly as they did. You know what I mean? Like, let's not forget, he was a first round draft pick.
Pick up all these guys off the waiver wire of the bargain basement rack for Pat Mahomes. I mean, this season for the Chiefs, Justin, and I think this is what you're getting at. This is like their 2006 or 2013 Patriots, where like they just didn't put the tools in the toolbox. You know, Raish Caldwell and Doug Gabriel year in 2006, or that 2013 year where they had Kembrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson. You know, like they did not give Mahomes the tools this year. And now you're seeing the fruits of that in consecutive weeks.
100%. And look, like Mahomes in Reed and this Chiefs team are good enough that last year with almost identically the same receiver core, they were able to win a Super Bowl. But like the whole point is that this is not a sustainable model for long-term success for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like Travis Kelce is getting older. Like this, you know what I mean? Like Mahomes needs another weapon. He needs some stability with those receivers. Like one of the things that I can't stand, I mean, you know, and if you're a fantasy player out there, you know this, there's not a single fantasy player or wide receiver other than, you know, Travis Kelce and the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, worth their salt rostering, because all those guys, you know, you look it down to like their sixth option and Justin Watson, they're all playing like 50, 60% of the snaps. They all have different packages they're out there for. It truly is a platoon by committee. They don't have any go-to guys. The closest thing they have to a go-to guy is a rookie in Rashee Rice, right? So like this is a team that does need to establish that offensive identity for Mahomes. They need to find some consistency. They were able to skate by last year, but we're seeing it catch up to them this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, I think that when you look at where they are right now, and let's face it, you know, we always talked about Belichick when this team was contending for Super Bowls, like, they always were better after Thanksgiving. And the Chiefs have now lost three games in a row, granted against three good teams, or maybe it's three out of four, because they lost Eagles, Packers, and they've lost three games in a row. And this is just a terrible place for them to be right now as a franchise. Are you questioning, Justin, the Kansas City Chiefs as a Super Bowl contender? Because as much as they look bad right now and they have a glaring hole on their roster, I'm going to fall back to the same thing with Belichick Brady for 10 years, which is like, it doesn't matter. They're still going to be the one of the final four or five teams just because they have Reed and Mahomes. So I clearly think they're a flawed team, and we know what their Achilles heel is at this point. It's week 14. And we know that the receiving core is a huge problem. But I still think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender, because I think they have a ticket to the conference championship game punched already because they have Reed and Mahomes. And maybe that's naive of me.
No, I don't think it's naive at all, because I look at this Kansas City team and I say, well, even though this may be the most vulnerable we've seen them in the last couple of years, this also to me is the most vulnerable we've seen the rest of the AFC and the AFC playoff picture the last couple of years. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to, like, you know, unless Buffalo makes it to the playoffs, which we just said they hopefully do. I mean, who is going, we've said this, who is going to contend with them? You got the Dolphins.
There's just so few teams that you could see.
There's so few teams. I mean, you know, like we said, Joe Burrow Joe Burrow is not there anymore with the Bengals. Aaron Rodgers got hurt. You know, the Jets are out of contention. I mean, the Miami Dolphins can't beat a team over 500. The Buffalo Bills are struggle. Who knows if they'll even make the playoffs? Like the Chiefs have Trevor Lawrence and the Jags look like they're trending in the wrong direction. The Ravens have absolutely no success with Lamar Jackson in the postseason. So it's like, I look at all this and I'm just like, even if the Chiefs are vulnerable, they still by far, I think, have an easy path to the AFC Championship and to the Super Bowl. And guess what? There's a very good chance that they could cakewalk it to the AFC Championship game into the Super Bowl and then face a team who just got the crap beat out of them for the last couple of weeks, because the winner of the NFC is going to have to go through an absolute gauntlet to get there, I think. So the Kansas City Chiefs, I think, right,
it's as much a commentary on the weakness of the AFC as a conference,
right,
than it is the Chiefs as a compliment to the Chiefs. I mean, it's the same thing, by the way, for the Patriots. Where, like, look, they had an easy pathway, a downhill path to 12-4 every year because Buffalo, Miami, and the Jets couldn't get out of their way. Right. And you give them 12 wins in the bye week and they're in the conference championship game with Belichick and Brady automatically. I mean, it's the same thing right now. This conference is mediocre. It's not a good conference. There are mediocre to bad teams that are going to make the playoffs in the AFC this year. And it's going to be like, even if they don't get the bye week, they're going to have an absolute cakewalk in the first week of the playoffs. So you get Indianapolis or Cleveland and Joe Flacco coming into Arrowhead Stadium, or Pittsburgh and Mitchell Trubisky coming into Arrowhead Stadium. Yeah. They're only going to have to win one game of probably somewhat moderate difficulty in the divisional round, and they're going to be in the conference championship again.
Yeah.
One more question about this Buffalo Kansas City thing, Justin, we'll move on. Do you think, like I do, that the Bills championship window is actually still open? Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm being too optimistic on Buffalo right now, but like, maybe I'm just kind of, because I'm kind of rooting for them because I've seen firsthand how much their fans have suffered. And if the Patriots are going to suck, I wouldn't mind seeing the Bills win, just to be honest with you, because I think they have great fans. I want the Bills championship window to be open. We talk about the Bills like the window is closed or closing. We've talked about it on this podcast. Is it closed or is there a sliver? Is it just still open, a sliver? What do you think?
I think it's open for this year. Like, I've said, like, I don't know how many years a team can spend rebuilding, adding pieces, getting closer and closer, without being able to cross the finish line. Like, how often can you just come up ever so close but so short without it mentally breaking the back and the spirit of a team in a locker room? And I think that this Bills team has put up with so much. Forget about their tenure as an organization. I mean, just think about the last couple of years since this whole, Josh Allen rebuild kind of completed itself and they were supposed to be contenders. Like, we've just seen heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. And I truly do think, look, we're seeing them now at 7-6. I think this is one of the worst records they've had at this point, almost midway through December, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years. I look at it and I say, I still think this is a team that could make it to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl this year just because of the talent on the team and how wide open the AFC is. But if these guys, you know, God forbid, get bounced by like a Joe Flacco Browns or like Indianapolis or somebody on, you know, goes up against Buffalo and just completely spanks them, I think this team could just totally implode in this offseason, and we may never see them recover.
I mean, the Buffalo Bills star has fallen really far, really fast, right? Because we were looking at them not that long ago as a team that was like clawing on the door of winning a championship. They were right there. And credit to us, because we kind of nailed this, I think, a few months before anyone else did, and just saying, look, their window is closing. Look at it. And really, since we had that conversation, I think we had it twice, maybe a year and a half ago, nothing, like everything that has happened on that trajectory. So we can take a victory lap on that, because like their window has progressively closed. But that said, I don't think it's 100% slammed shut yet for them. And if they make the playoffs this year, they're going to be a tough out in a weak conference. Combine that with the strength, the brilliance of Josh Allen, and I think you have a sliver of hope for that Buffalo team this year. Just my personal two cents.
Yep, I completely agree. I think the window is still open this year. I think they have a decent chance if they're able to stay healthy and sneak into the playoffs. But again, if they lose in some disappointing fashion this year, I could see it all come crumbling down next year for them. You already know, like, it's not quite, you know, guys like Stephon Diggs are pretty ticked off. They're not happy, right? You know that he's not the only one in that locker room that's starting to question, hey, how do we have all this talent, all of these pieces around us, and we keep falling short every year? You know that eventually you can only get over that so much.
Yeah. And I mean, I think in a sense, the bottom is almost kind of falling out. And I don't think anyone, I think there was a lot of pressure. We talked about this. There's a lot of pressure they were putting on themselves to take that final step. And it's almost like now the pressure's off them, right? And that whole Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, internal thing that was happening there, that's gone now, because nobody is expecting them to win the Super Bowl this year. Now they can just go out and play. And who knows? Maybe they get lucky in the postseason. Josh Allen plays a couple great games and they find themselves in Vegas in February. I just think stranger things have happened, and certainly a weak conference, I think, is possible. All right, let's talk about the other crazy game between playoff teams or playoff borderline teams. That was the Rams and the Ravens. A couple takes I have on this game. First of all, it feels so often like when you're in these kind of games and situation, the team with the better quarterbacks, like it feels like 90% of the time they come out on top. It's such a quarterback-driven league. And that's what I was thinking. I mean, Stafford's a good quarterback. I think Lamar Jackson is still a great one, even though he might be declining a little. You know, it just feels like the team with that franchise quarterback, if you're one of those three or four teams, and we saw this for 20 years with Brady, feels like they always win. And you know, kind of happened yesterday with Lamar Jackson. The real commentary for me yesterday from that game, Justin, is that the Rams are a middling team in the NFC and the Ravens are supposedly the best team in the AFC or at least, you know, right up there. It's sort of a commentary on the strengths of relative strengths of the conferences, isn't it? That a borderline playoff team in the NFC can go into the best team in the AFC's stadium and really should have walked away with a victory.
For sure. I mean, look, I will say in the Rams' defense, they are one of the hotter teams in football right now, right? But to your point, you go into the number one seed in the AFC's house, they should be able to handle business. I mean, look, like, to your point, that was not what you expect to see when a middle of the road team in, you know, goes up against one of the top teams in the league, right? And look, I think the Ravens are just, I don't know what it is. The Ravens to me are almost like the Cowboys of the AFC in the sense that I see the talents. I see the roster construction. I see what everybody gets excited about, but it's just the constant disappointment, the constant like falling short, just the constant like letdown games, the constant not being able to explain the performance that we're seeing, like, oh, either why this team is as good as it is or as bad as it is. That's just, I just can't get over that with the Baltimore Ravens. And I think the Rams did expose them a little bit. Like the Ravens may be 10-3, but this is a very beatable team and certainly doesn't, to me, carry the weight of the number one overall seed in the AFC.
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail exactly on the head. Like, yeah, you can tell me mathematically they're the best team in the conference. They don't live up to the title of the best team in the conference. They are not typically what you see in a number one type seed, and they're very erratic. How many leads have they blown in the fourth quarter in the last two seasons? Like, they're a very, very beatable team. And you saw that yesterday. They were very lucky to walk away with a win. I mean, bare butt for a few bounces of the ball. The Rams, a very mediocre Rams team that I think is the eighth team in the AFC right now, goes in and beats them.
Yeah, exactly. And look, like, again, this is a Ravens team that I know they've had injury problems. You know, if you look at the Ravens over the last couple of years, I can't think of a team who's had more trouble keeping their starters healthy than the Baltimore Ravens. But nevertheless, this is a team that has a lot to prove and a lot of question marks, at least in our eyes, I think, and I'm sure in a lot of other people's eyes too. And they're going to have a lot of pressure as that number one seed going into the playoffs. Lamar just signed that big deal. I mean, I am very much expecting someone to move on from Wild Card Weekend, heading to Baltimore in the divisional round, and hand them, you know, their lunch.
Let's go to Cleveland yesterday, Justin, because I think both those teams are kind of interesting in different ways.
Yeah.
First of all, look, yesterday was an opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to show that he is what people say he is supposed to be, which is a top five quarterback, a franchise quarterback. You're on a bad ankle, didn't even know if he was going to play, going up against a good team, coming off a bad loss. You got to go, you know, Trevor Lawrence, you want to be a franchise quarterback, go in there and win that game. Go in there and win that game, walk out with a victory, and prove that you belong to be considered as one of the top teams in this conference. Instead, what does Trevor Lawrence do yesterday? He goes out, he throws three terrible interceptions, and loses a game that was there for the taking. I'm sorry. Trevor Lawrence, no excuses, okay? That was two bad, back-to-back bad performances in a row with playoffs on the line. The Jaguars are probably still making the postseason because of the division they're in. But Trevor Lawrence continues to show you that he is no franchise quarterback. He's an above-average quarterback with, I think, a lot of questions about whether he can actually win consistently in this league at a high level.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I remember somebody sent me, or I'm sorry, I sent them, because we were talking about it a few weeks ago. I sent them a graphic, and through their careers, Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones have an almost identical, indistinguishable stat line. And it's, to me, I look at that and I'm like, how are we talking about one quarterback in the sense that they may never start for an NFL team again, other than if called upon as a backup, or if they're even lucky to wind up as a backup, in the other quarterback with an almost identical track record in performance? We're talking about him, or at least the media and the pundits and the rest of the league is talking about him as if, oh, this is a potential MVP candidate one day. This is a true franchise quarterback, a generational this, he's so that. I am just so over the whole Trevor Lawrence thing. Do I think he can be a serviceable quarterback? Maybe, but I think this guy is just so overhyped, so overblown. And I think we've seen time and time again that this Jags team is, I think, a pretender, not a contender.
Yeah, and where are your excuses for Trevor Lawrence, right? Like, he has a good defense. He has an offensive-minded coach that's won a Super Bowl with Nick friggin' Foles as his quarterback. He made Nick Foles look good.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got good receivers, a good team, really good running game, and he continues to show he's a serviceable quarterback. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I don't think he's a bust. Fine. He's the best quarterback from that draft. Fully admit and acknowledge that. I just personally right now, I put him in that 10 to 15 range. Maybe closer to 15. I think they're at times almost winning, not because of him, but just kind of with him. I don't want to say in spite of him, but kind of he's just kind of going along for the ride with a team that's a pretty good team. I just don't see what the hype was all about for this guy. Like, he's not what they said he was coming out, for sure. And I don't think he's ever going to be, if we haven't seen it yet. I don't see it happening, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the same boat. I think Trevor Lawrence is, not to say that there aren't some good Jaguar seasons in the cards with him at the helm, but I don't look at this guy as someone who's going to run the AFC, even the AFC South, let alone the AFC or the NFL for the foreseeable future. I don't think he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I think that if you're the Jags, then, you know, you commit to this guy, I think you're kind of just keeping yourself destined for a stretch of average to, at times, maybe above average play. And I think that's going to be your ceiling.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I think you can win with Trevor Lawrence. I'm not saying that, but you can win with a lot of quarterbacks what I'm saying is nothing special about this guy. He's no Mahomes. He's no Josh Allen. He's not even close to that. He's an above average quarterback. What about the team, Justin, on the other side of the ball? I think they're an intriguing team, the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco is playing great, and the Browns actually look legit. And the thought crossed my mind yesterday that if Joe Flacco physically can keep playing like this, and I think that's a real question for a guy that they pulled off the scrap heap, that is 38 years old. What's going to happen with him? How is he going to hold up after 5, 6, 7, 8 games? But if he can continue to play at this level, the Browns might be better off with Joe Flacco than they were with Deshaun Watson.
Honestly, it's so weird to see, you know, you look at this Browns team, they lost two of their bigger names on offense. Nick Chubb goes down. Deshaun Watson goes down. And they just seem to keep chugging along. I think this Browns team is good, and they scare me in the sense that they, I think, fly under a lot of people's radar. and they have a really good defense. And to me, that's the recipe for a team that can catch you when you're not ready for it or if you're not expecting it. Like, but Joe Flacco was a big question mark. You're 100% right. Like, can he stay healthy? Can he continue to perform? But I mean, he's looked pretty good. But
aren't you
going
to root for, aren't you kind of going to root for them? Like, you're a Patriots yes. fan. Patriots aren't in the postseason. You're looking for teams to get behind. The Browns are a good team to get behind too, because this is a good story. I mean, with pulling Flacco off the dumpster and putting him in and you know, maybe making a playoff run. I love it.
I love it too. No, the Browns are one of those teams. Like, look, there's with the Patriots being out of contention this year, there's definitely a couple teams around the league that, you know, I would like to be able to see do well. I'm kind of, you know, I'm getting behind them with support. The Browns are definitely one of them. Like, that's a team that especially now that they without Deshaun Watson, like if this was still the Deshaun Watson Browns, I'd kind of be sitting there like, ah, look at these bums. Like, I hope they go into Arrowhead and get the doors blown off them. But I don't know. Like, the fact that this organization is just been so bad and so mediocre for so long. Joe Flacco's here. They're somehow winning games. It's like, I don't know. I would just kind of like to see them make some noise.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be a team I'm rooting for. They really are. Let's go to a couple other quick takes. I want to say, look, it's a quarterback driven league. We all know that, but don't tell me that the players around the quarterback don't matter too.
Yeah.
I know, and I wrote about this a few weeks ago on one of our posts that you can go back and read it. The Cincinnati Bengals have a lot of good players on that offense. It was obviously going to be a drop-off going from Joe Burrow, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, to Browning. But I did not believe that the Bengals were going to completely fall apart, because just like some people did, because there's so much talent on that offense. Good coach, offensive minded, okay, rebuilt offensive line, ton of skill position talent, great running back, good tight ends. Okay, all the tools are there for a quarterback to come in and take over and keep it going. Now, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but my point is they're not going to fall apart.
The Bengals, to me, are still a scary football team. Like, I think what I'm starting to realize about the Bengals is, like, yes, look, and you know, I'm a Joe Burrow guy. I love Joe Burrow. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he's definitely a valuable franchise quarterback. But I think what we're seeing is that this Bengals team is a little bit better of a team than we have thought. Like, I think maybe, you know, the last couple of years we thought, oh, you know, Joe Burrow and guys like Ja'Marr Chase are kind of just, you know, lighting it up and willing this team to some victories. Like, no, like I think this Bengals team is a very solid team from top to bottom. Like, that defense really comes out and plays well without having too many big names to speak of. I mean, Jake Browning has stepped in. I mentioned his name on the Patriots podcast earlier. I mean, he's come in and absolutely kind of lit it up these last two games. And I look at this Bengals team as still a threat. I think they're probably going to wind up making the playoffs. And it would be very interesting to see what they do without Joe Cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a shot. And I mean, but I think the larger point is, look, they didn't fall apart. And there's just a lot more talent on that team. And it's like, you know, when just to tie it back into New England, right? And I mean, you look at the situation Burrow went into, and I'm not trying to say Burrow isn't a great player, because he is, but when you see the way that the backup quarterback has been able to come in and assimilate so easily, it does, you know, remind you that a good situation is important for a young quarterback. Jake Browning, you know, he's coming into a good situation, just like Joe Burrow was. And it makes a difference for the development of the player. And I think you can't lose sight of that. Let's move to Minnesota, Justin, because the Minnesota Vikings were shut out for 58 minutes yesterday. I believe they won against the Raiders 3-0. That was a horrible, horrible, unwatchable game. It's time for a little bit of respect for Kirk Cousins. Okay, we all like to trash Kirk Cousins because he's not a great quarterback. He's not Mahomes. He's not Allen. He's not Burrow. He doesn't win championships, but he's a very good quarterback who has put up good numbers, won a lot of games, done a lot in this league. I don't know if Kirk Cousins could win a Super Bowl if he was in the right situation. You know, my gestalt is yes, he could,
if he had the right talent around him, because he's won a lot. He's put up big numbers. But you look at how pathetic that offense has gotten. And I know Justin Jefferson got hurt yesterday. They still have other good players. And the Raiders aren't exactly the 85 Bears. It's time for a little bit of respect for Kirk Cousins. Just a little.
Yeah, look, Kirk Cousins has been a consistent quarterback. Like he's not even consistent, but like he came out of the gate very hot this year. I mean, you know, obviously tough. You know, he's got the knock on him that he can't win in prime time. He's got the knock on him that, you know, he chokes in the playoffs, so that he won't win a Super Bowl. But if you're looking for a quarterback to lead your team out there on any given Sunday and compete and make that offense run well, I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to give you, I think, a good of opportunity as the majority of the quarterbacks in this league. And you're seeing what this offense has looked like since he got injured. Now, granted, Justin Jefferson has missed like the last 5 weeks, and he actually, I think, got knocked out of the game like a couple of plays into it with the chest injury on Sunday. But still, this offense is clearly not the same without him. And obviously, you know, you say, well, going from a starter to a backup, it's very tough to keep that same, you know, expectation and level of performance. But look, Kirk clearly was doing his thing in the Minnesota offense, and it's clearly not the same without him.
Absolutely. All right, a couple more quick takes, Justin, and then we're going to wrap up the Around the League podcast, okay? Number one, Zach Wilson played the best game of his career yesterday. Justin Fields also played a very good game. These are two guys that I think most of us thought they would be gone next year from their respective teams. Is there any way that Zach Wilson or Justin Fields can save their jobs over the next 4 weeks? Or are they both toast next year?
I think Zach Wilson's toast. I think Justin Fields still has a chance. Justin Fields has shown, not consistently, but he's shown that there is some potential in there. Like, he's been able to take over games. He's been able to win games. Now, he can't do it on a consistent basis, but you could argue that the potential's there. And he, again, maybe, you know, you need to make a coaching change. Maybe you gotta help beef up that defense in a line a little bit. I don't know. But I definitely think Justin Fields may have a little bit more security than Zach Wilson. I think Zach Wilson's a foregone conclusion that he'll be lucky to be a backup. I mean, when Aaron Rodgers comes back, you know, it's obviously not even a question, right? Like the thing is, Zach Wilson is 100% going back to being a backup next year, maybe even a third string, right?
Yep.
Justin Fields.
I don't think there's any pathway for Zach Wilson. No matter what he does in these last four games, it was so bad for so long and just so much went wrong that I feel like the Jets, there's no way they're going to be able to convince themselves to stick with this guy. Justin Fields is a little bit of a tougher situation, I feel like. And I think when you talk about the Justin Fields thing, you have to talk about the uniqueness of the opportunity the Bears have. They're going to have two top five picks, which doesn't happen very often, right? Yeah. So, like, they have a chance to move on this ever. I mean, like, really, like, you got a quarterback heavy draft and you've got two top five picks. Like, you may not feel totally great about moving on from Justin Fields. You may feel like he deserves another year, or you'd be tempted by the possibility of drafting Marvin Harrison and giving him another year. But you're passing up, if you do that, you're passing up an opportunity to take a franchise quarterback that you might not get back. And what might happen is, if you go that route, you keep Fields, you draft Harrison, you draft the tackle, and all of a sudden you win 6 or 7, 8 games. Now you're stuck in the mediocre zone forever. And your pathway to getting one of those really premium franchise quarterback guys, which admittedly is a roll of dice, that window is closed forever. So I think that's a huge part of the Bears' dilemma, is that they got a golden opportunity here.
Well, can I ask you this? Like, by the same token, you know, I'm listening to you say that, and I'm asking myself, why, if with this unique opportunity, you know, look, we're sitting here talking about, you know, if you're the Patriots, do you risk it on a quarterback, or do you risk it, or do you go non-quarterback, right? Like, if you're the Bears with two top five picks, is it crazy to say that you could do both? Like, you could still go out there and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or that left tackle out of Penn State, and still go grab like a top tier quarterback and say, hey, we still got great value in the first round for, you know, a generational type of player. And now we got a kid who's coming in a rookie deal and he's ready. He can sit there behind Justin Fields for a year or two, or even, you know, maybe he's ready to come in this year. But I don't know, like, I could see that being you. I could see the Bears saying, hey, we're in a unique position with our flexibility and our two draft picks where we can do both.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know though, because if they keep winning enough games, and I don't know what they're draft position is now, but my guess is they're probably like 5 to 10, 5, 6, 7, something like that. Like, that second pick, it's going to be a good pick, but it's not going to be a good enough pick to take one of those premium guys probably. And, you know, they're going to have one crack at that with the number one pick. I mean, getting a number one pick in a quarterback rich draft class is a very, very unique opportunity. There have been years, like, remember there was a year a couple of years ago, Kansas City had the first pick in the draft, and I think it was Eric Fisher. They had to take the tackle, even though they needed a quarterback. There was just no quarterback worthy of a high draft pick. So, yeah, you know, they could potentially try to do that. Like, maybe, you know, you take Marvin Harrison first and say you get the 8th or 9th pick, you take Jaden Daniels or something. I don't know.
Right.
And maybe that's a viable strategy too. But I just think, like, you know, the whole Caleb Williams, Drake May thing, the big 1-2 thing, doesn't happen every year. The Bears are really in the place right now where they can, like, write their own ticket. And that's, I think that's going to be a tough opportunity for them to pass up, even if it makes sense to give Fields another year. All right, brother, I think we're going to wrap it up. You have any more thoughts around the league before we close out this edition of the Around the League podcast, Dr. Football podcast?
No, just another exciting week. I mean, I feel like the season's flying by. We're already sitting here, you know, heading into what, week 15 next week, week 14? Was it?
Yeah. I think next week is week 15.
Yeah, week 15. So, I mean, yeah, it's you know, it's funny because even though our season, like, seems like dragging out forever, we talked about the Patriots and how it's just, you know, more games. It's like the rest of the league is flying by. I can't believe it's already week 15. So,
I mean, it's like, you know, September, October, November is really prime time. And then you get to that, and no disrespect went to that game, but like the Army Navy game is a great thing. But when you get to that first weekend where that's the only college game on, yeah, and you're like, oh shit, like that's like the first sign that football season is like winding down. Right. You know, the college football, that's that lull between the bowl games and the end of the college football regular season and conference championship games. So that's where we are now. And you look, a lot of the games are meaningless at this point because a lot of the teams are out of it. It's definitely, you know, the stakes are higher in some of the games as well. So it's a little different, but it's that time of year. And like you said, the season is moving fast.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, it's another week in the books, right?
Another week in the books. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever happens in week 15 of the calendar. God, that sounds crazy. And want to wish everyone a great holiday season, great Christmas season. That's starting to heat up too. And we'll catch you all back next week with another edition of the Dr. Football Around the League podcast.